I made a promise to myself many years ago that I would go out there and every single day earn the right, you know, to be on this earth again, and by serving others and paying it forward.
That's Medal of Honor recipient Florent Groberg sharing his story of 8 Seconds of Courage. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
My good friend and fellow veteran Bob Ulin has come out with his new book titled Transitions 2.0. This is the best book for any transitioning veteran. Check out Transitions 2.0 at veteranonthemove.com/transitions. Florent Groberg, welcome to Veteran on the Move. It's an honor having you on the show today. Before we get to talking about business and entrepreneurship, take us back and tell us what you did in the Army.
Well, thanks for having me. I served in the Army for just a little over 7 years. I was an infantryman. I entered in 2008 and went through my regular training to include the basic training, officer candidate school, and then the bullocks, as well as airborne ranger school. I deployed to Afghanistan twice. It was the first time in 2009, 2010 to the eastern province of Kunar, where I was at the Hanukkah Miracle and leading Dagger 4 platoon out of 212 infantry units based out of Fort Carson, 4-5-D. You know, following that tour, I came back, became an XO, then was selected to run the security team for at the time Brigade Commander Colonel Mingus, and we redeployed to the same area of Afghanistan in 2012, where I served as his personal security detail officer. I had a team of six, include myself, and for the course of 6 months, all we did was just, you know, plan his air movements and protect him on the ground, coordinate with different receiving units to make sure that if we left the wire, that he had 12 to 15 escorts, and then just protected him. But unfortunately, on August 8, 2012, while going to the provincial governor's security meeting in eastern Afghanistan, in Kunar province, with Governor Wahidi, our unit, as we were walking outside of Kop Fayez towards the security compound, which is about 1,100 meter movement, we were targeted and attacked by two suicide bombers. They came at us with two motorcycles to create a diversion, and following two motorcycles in front of our patrol, a man came out of a structure, and which I was able to identify and neutralize to the best of my ability at that moment. When I threw him to the ground, he detonated, which threw me, you know, about 20 feet away from the blast. He also caused a second suicide bomb, and I was still in a structure to detonate. But the first one, unfortunately, killed four of my brothers, Command Sergeant Griffin, Major Gray, Major Kennedy, and Reggie Abdel Fattah. Mm-hmm. And so my career ended a couple years later at Walter Reed Hospital, but in essence, really, it ended on August 8, 2012, just on one of those missions where it's supposed to be easy, but the enemy, you know, was patient and took an opportunity, and it came after us. And unfortunately, we lost four great Americans.
You know, the way you described it, it sounded like the enemy's plan was well orchestrated. You said there was a couple of motorcycles that drove by and created a distraction, and then this guy just kind of came innocently walking out of a building nearby.
Yeah, this was, you know, this was 2012, and their motto, the enemy, was spectacular attacks. I think in years prior, specifically when I was there in 2009, 2010, it was a lot of small attacks, a lot of ambushes. In this case, they really wanted to make sure that they utilize their efforts correctly against us, and that, you know, a suicide bomber, when you have two of them, you know they're serious about it. And so they were patient. You know, I'm pretty sure that this was probably ready for weeks, and they just saw an opportunity on that specific day, and they came after us. But they were really well organized. The motorcycles were obviously, you know, to create a diversion. We were lucky enough that right before we left, I didn't have the security detail. My 12 to 15, I had requested the night prior from the receiving unit, the U.S. unit. But I got to take a couple of the Afghan National Army. I took almost 10 of them, and I put them at the front of my patrol. And it was an ANA soldier that, you know, raised his rifle and caused the motorcycles not to get any closer. And I think that actually really played a big part in terms of what happened next, because that prompted all of us to stop and really identify the situation, which then allowed me, because of the support of my platoon sergeant, to really identify the guy to my left, who was the first suicide bomber.
When you rushed this guy and took him to the ground, well, the other team members that ended up getting killed as a result, were they right there with you, or were they obviously within the blast radius, just, you know, the blast spread out from there? I don't mean to go into too much, you know, tough detail here, but I'm a little curious about where were the other guys? What were they doing? Or you may not have even known because you were focused on taking the guy down yourself.
Well, from my understanding, you know, I was laser focused on the enemy at that point. I saw him as a threat, so I went towards him. But you know, this happened in almost 8 seconds, in this entire scenario. And the name of the book, 8 Seconds of Courage. But I ran towards him and, you know, yelled at him, hit him, grabbed him, threw him. And Sergeant Mahoney, my RTO, followed me as I was doing so. When I grabbed him, I yelled at him towards him, I bombed. And when I threw him to the ground, Sergeant Mahoney just kind of moved a little bit forward and pushed him down just enough that he was able to definitely land on his chest, which probably saved my life and Mahoney's life and potentially a lot of other people's lives as well. You know, Command Sergeant Major and Major Gray, Major Kennedy, and then Reggie Abdel Fattah, who was State Department, they were almost 20, 30 feet away from the blast. Mm-hmm. And when the man detonated, it's just luck of the draw almost. You know, it's just where ball bearings are going to go. And unfortunately, they went towards that direction. We were spared. They weren't. And something that, you know, I've lived with for the rest of my I've been living with for since then in my life.
Right. Well, yeah, it's a tough day. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know it's tough talking about it. And so you also wrote a book about it, but we're going to talk about the book a little later, 8 Seconds of Courage. What I'd like to hear from you, I've never had a Medal of Honor recipient on Veteran on the Move. We've done over 200 interviews here and have been doing this almost 4 years. What we do talk about a lot is transition, and have had a lot of wounded warriors and heroic individuals on the show before. I'm real curious to hear what your experience was like a couple years at Walter Reed, what the extent of your injuries were, and what your transition being medically retired out of the Army was like.
So I suffered pretty severe injuries to my left calf. I'm missing 50% of the calf, and I was limb salvage. I decided to be limb salvage. They put the position in my hands in regards to the whether I wanted amputation or fight for it. And I've been fighting my entire life. I fought for it. Hindsight, if I could go back, I would have said amputation. I would have recovered a lot quicker and definitely be a little bit more mobile right now. But really? So is life. And I lost hearing my left ear. I also had they called it mild TBI, which I'd love to know what a severe TBI is, because I lost the ability to really recognize, do simple math and recognize the objects and animals for almost 6 to 8 weeks. And in a way, I don't ever feel like I've totally 100% recovered. But that was part of the injuries that they assessed me with. As we speak, I'm having some really weird issues now with my back, and I'm hoping that that's just because I'm terrible at CrossFit, instead of anything that's been dwelling since that specific attack. But you know, I was in a bad spot for many months. I was in the hospital. I suffered from survivor's guilt. I didn't know why I was spared. Well, 4 incredible Americans, family men, and well-respected individuals in the community, you know, didn't make it. And so this was a big struggle for me in the hospital. And really, when you add in the allotted oxys, ketamine, morphine, and IV Benadryl when I, you know, to go to sleep, you know, those fed my demons at night and really put in some bad thoughts. But so for 4 months of my life, I was really struggling. Even though I was able to hide it to an extent on the outside, it really on the inside, it was my own little internal war. A lot tougher than anything I've ever faced overseas. But I had the right support system, specifically from Travis Mills, who's a quadruple amputee, an incredible American, who really, you know, showed me the light in essence by being out there and talking to me and making me realize that I had a responsibility. And he sort of gave me another mission in life, which was to honor my brothers and their families. And so that really was a part of my transition, specifically on the mental side, where I was able to you know, really get myself out of this dark hole and go out there and get and serve another mission, a life mission. But after that, you know, when, and also I wanted to go back in the military. I want to go back be an infantryman. I wanted to go back, you know, and go to regiment and serve out there as a officer captain. But the doctors quickly shut that down when they told me my injuries were pretty severe enough that I wouldn't be able to go back as an infantryman. And so it was all about transition, and it was hard at first because, you know, I didn't know what my next passion would be. I knew my passion was to serve in the military, put on uniform,
right,
humping up and down mountains, lead men in combat and be led by men in combat. And so here I was in this new world, and I decided that, well, there's one thing for sure that I need to go back and do, which is, you know, continue and to further my education. Can't ever hurt. I've been a big advocate to all my soldiers and my peers that, you know, education is a way to success. And so, I always expected my soldiers to go out there and utilize a tuition assistant while they're in the service. But, when they transition to really go back to school, if they went and work, maybe do night school. So I went back to school in University of Maryland, University College, to get my master's in management with specialization in intelligence policies. And then I found myself a mentor. I realized, like, I didn't know anything about anything. So I wanted to find someone that had somewhat of a similar background who was successful in the civilian world to kind of guide me, mentor me, and lead me into finding out what I could be doing next.
Yeah.
Lots of trial and error, but I was lucky. You know, I compared to my peers and anybody else that's currently active duty in our military, I was injured. So literally all I had was time on my hand. And being injured also allows us to go out there and do internships about 20 hours a week. So I was able, and luckily, I was able to actually, you know, go through a trial and error period where I did an intern for an IT company, didn't like it at all. Did an intern for another, like, a weapons manufacturer, which I thought would be awesome, but turned out to be completely different than what I expected. So I didn't like it at all. And then I ended up in the government, working for one of the agencies, and I loved it. And so, but I realized for me to get there and succeed was I needed to find a mentor. I needed to find an organization that was willing to, like, listen to me and really put together, help me rewrite my resume, speak that resume, understand that resume. But most importantly, they helped me network so I could have conversation and talk to individuals with similar backgrounds or completely different backgrounds and really find myself where, you know, somewhere where I could have an opportunity to learn something new and potentially find an next passion, which I did.
Well, that's awesome. How did you go about finding a mentor? Did you just ask around and randomly get a hold of somebody? Because we've talked about American Corporate Partners on the show in the past. That's actually an organization that's set up to actually help veterans find mentors in the civilian sector. How did you find yours?
Yeah, I know about the American Corporate Center a little bit. I was at Walter Reed and, you know, we have a lot of support out there, and I was part with the SOCOM coalition, and I asked, Rory, I said, Rory, man, and what can I do, you know, to really set myself up for success? He's like, you got to go talk to Jared Shepard. Yeah. He got his nonprofit called Warriors Ethos, and they would love to have a conversation with you based on your background and what you want to do. And so I went to talk to Jared, and at first I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is for me. And Jared just kind of never quit on me. And about 5 months later, you know, we were on the phone again. I said, I'll talk to you. Former NCO, sniper that turned Signal. He started his own business and now he's got over 150 employees in his company and he's a big defense contractor. He just, you know, and he worked his entire life. He made it. He's a workhorse. Like, I consider myself a workhorse. And so, you know, it was exactly what I needed. In terms of a mentor, I wanted someone that, you know, similar characteristics and personality traits, but also a killer when it comes out to, like, you know, making something of himself. And so I knew I had a lot to learn from him. Mm-hmm. And even though he's asked me since then to come work for him, I told him I can't do it, man, because, you know, we butt heads too much. We're too much alike. But it was just about, you know, really finding someone I connected with and asking people. That's the way you do it. You know, you kind of go around and ask people.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think a lot of times veterans, guys getting out, they don't want to just specifically ask somebody. I mean, most people are not going to turn down a veteran if they say, hey, man, I just want some help, or can you help me with this, or can you spend some time with me and teach me this?
Yeah.
But most guys think that somebody's just going to come along and fall in their lap. That's not going to happen.
No, if you want free handouts, you're in the wrong business. You know, it's just not the way it works. I say, if you want to find the right mentor for you, it's someone you emulate, right? You look at someone, and I'm not talking about Brad Pitt, right? I'm talking about, like, you know, in our world, like successful people that you can touch and connect with. Mm-hmm. And people, you look at them, you're like, well, okay. He will understand where I come from because he's got a similar background, or at least he worked in the environment. And I really like what he or she does. And I really want to get there. So I'd like to find out how they got there. I'd like to find out what their struggles were, what their successes were, how they build a team, how they were part of a team, how they led a team, if they ever followed well as a leader, and everything that I can figure out about them, because that's something I'm going to put in my kit bag and then I'm going to utilize in my own professional development. So that's my recommendation in that aspect.
Hey, great advice. Hey, Florent, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Army veteran Bob Ulan knows the struggles veterans face in the transition process and has dedicated his post-retirement years to helping veterans successfully transition into the civilian sector. His new book, Transitions 2.0, is one of the best books for any veteran facing the transition process. You can find Transitions 2.0 at veteranonthemove.com/transitions. Also, Bob Ulan is the chairman and CEO of the Center for Transitional Leadership. CTL seeks to assist and empower Armed Forces personnel during their transition from military service to private sector employment, with particular focus on helping military men and women position themselves to be sought-after candidates in the civilian workforce. I have the pleasure of serving on the board of directors for CTL, and you can check out the CTL website by going to veteranonthemove.com/CTL. All right, we're back talking with Florent Groberg, Medal of Honor recipient from the Army. Florent, before the break, you shared your story and you were on a roll. You're doing some great things, and you walked through what for the most part is a typical transition of most veterans when they get out. And so I appreciate you walking us through that and sharing that story. You said you worked for the government for a while, but actually you're working at Boeing as a director for veteran outreach right now. What are you doing there, and how's that job going for you?
First of all, it's going amazing. I work for an organization that is massive. You know, I think we have over 140,000 employees. And so I was a little nervous coming into a big corporation such as Boeing, but it's been a blessing. It's been really an opportunity to really find myself in terms of as a professional and what I can accomplish. But most importantly, I get to work in a world where I made a promise to myself many years ago that I would go out there and every single day earn the right, you know, to be on this earth again, and by serving others and paying it forward. And with the Boeing Company, I come to a team with over 20,000 veterans within our ranks. And my job is to lead all veterans outreach efforts across globally, and not just across the country, but globally. And the two main focus that I brought together in a strategy with my coworkers and my teammates was, you know, one focus on workforce transition, you know, allowing service members and veterans to figure out the right tools to, you know, build that effective resume, learn how to speak that resume, how to network. All those things that I went through my transition that I struggled with at first, where I needed support with, we're going out there working with the right organization. We're working with the USO Pathfinder program. We're working with Rally Point 6, or we're working with the Mission Continues. So we are partnering up with some outstanding VSOs out there in our communities who are having a direct impact on those service members and veterans, as well as their families during their transition phase. We're also focusing on our recovery and rehabilitation initiatives. I'm talking about PTS, talk about TBI, talk about physical and moral injuries, suicidal ideations, things that I potentially went through, or didn't potentially, that I went through during my recovery. And I understand, you know, unfortunately, intimately, you know, what can happen when people don't have that support system and they feel like they shouldn't be on this earth anymore. And they decide to take their lives, or they're struggling. They can't keep a job. They can't keep a family. They can't pay their bills because they're having, you know, external issues to others. But really, in reality, it's all about being, you know, hurting internally. And so we're working on, with more organizations to support those folks and their families, provide them the right care, to allow them to successfully reintegrate back into society and be a part of the mission again, just the way they see fit and the way they've been wanting to be part of the mission again. So it's been our focus, it's been our drive. Between the funding that we gave, I mean, we're going to provide about $25 million over the course of the next 3 years just to veteran service organizations, or the 1.75 million hours that we're going to put over the next 5 years in the community where employee engagements, we're trying to save lives.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Florent, does this surprise you that with all of the efforts in corporate America going on to hire veterans and all of the goals and desires of veterans to get out into corporate America and work, how big the divide is between the two?
Well, I think, you know, we're doing a lot of good work. That's what's happening. That's what I'm seeing. I agree. It's been a big divide, but I have to be positive here. And I have to say that a heck of a lot of folks are now stepping up to the plate and doing a lot of good work to bridge that gap, to make sure that we're providing the right opportunities for our service members, their families, and our veterans to, you know, succeed, because they deserve it. And the main reason that folks have not succeeded at times is because we're so focused on our mission while in the military, and we're not focused really on our transition. We completely underestimate the what it takes to successfully transition. You know, life is different when you don't put on that uniform. You got to pay for your medical. You don't get that housing allowance. You don't get that food allowance. Your job is not as secure as it was in the military. You know, it's pretty hard to get kicked out of the military. You really got to screw up. And so in the real world is a completely different animal where people, you know, just see you as another civilian. And so, you know, we have to teach them how to successfully transition. We also have to teach corporate America how to bring in veterans and provide and allow them to succeed within their companies. And that means potentially has set up mentor programs or, you know, reintegration programs or whatever you want to call it. But it's we're working it, you know, between our partnership with the USO Pathfinder program, which is doing an incredible job at 25 different military installations in terms of supporting veterans while they're still in the service, 18 months prior to transitioning, where they do a lot of the things we talked about, from the resume to the mentorship to the networking to the transition summits to George W. Bush summit, where we bring in some of our top nonprofit organizations and top organizations, corporate American organizations who are, and as well as educational partners who are doing some great things in the community.
Well, that's awesome. So, hey, Florent, I do want to compliment you. You know, you're representing, you know, the medal well. You're doing honorable things, and, you know, so good on you for doing that. It does come as you said, or maybe it was Travis Mills. You know, it does come with a big responsibility, and, you know, you're doing good with that from everything I've seen. So, you know, once again, good on you. I actually saw you were on David Letterman one time, weren't you?
Stephen Colbert.
Okay, Stephen Colbert. And he pointed out the fact that you actually grew up in France. So, and then eventually you rescinded your citizenship in France to go into the U.S. Army. And so he asked you to say something to your French folks, and you went on this you eloquently. Even though I don't speak French, you eloquently said hello to the people from France. It was just a really moving moment, you know, when he had you do that. And of course, you said everything else great, you know, when you're on the show. And it's got to be nerve wracking when here you are in an Army uniform, and now you're on some late night talk show, and you're like, oh man. So you've done a great job with it. I don't know what kind of coaching or help you had along the way, but phenomenal job. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure you know that. So let's talk about your book. We've had actually kind of on a string of military authors in the last few weeks, and I want to hear about your book. And, you know, what point in your head did you think, you know, maybe I ought to write a book about this?
So I had a, you know, co-writer, and really it was three of us writing this book, because my fiance Carson Zarin played a major role into it. But co-writer Tom Saleo called me, emailed me, and then came to visit Carson and I, and still, you know, trying to convince us to write this book. And I was really skeptical at first, and then I realized this could be a really awesome opportunity to highlight the four friends that I lost over there, Griffin, Gray, Kennedy, and Reggae. And then also, you know, as we started writing this book, we, you know, it was a lot of stuff about immigration were happening in our country. And I'm an immigrant. I didn't speak English until I was 12 years old. And so I thought that it would be a great opportunity to kind of just tell a little bit of a story of a kid that came from, you know, nowhere in Paris, just outside of Paris, France, who, you know, being able to, you know, call President Obama a friend. So it's crazy, right? Because the opportunities are provided in this country if you take advantage of them, right, and if you work hard. But then lastly, it was also very therapeutic. You know, putting things on paper is a lot different than talking about it at times. And so for me, I was really able to express my feelings in this book in regards to, you know, my time in the service, not just on August 8, 2012, but really that first deployment as well. All the men and women I served with who played an integral part in my success, or, you know, the folks that really helped me when I was in the hospital and I was struggling. And there's also some fun stuff, some memories that, you know, I forgot about, you know, meeting Korn, the Korn band in Longstuhl Hospital, when I thought I was hallucinating seeing Jonathan Davis, but I wasn't. He was actually there on a USO tour. To, you know, the experiences I had in Afghanistan when I'm trying to take a piss outside and I'm being shot at by a sniper. I'm not going to get into too much details, or fall into a creek where I thought it was a creek, but it really wasn't a creek. It was more of like a number two, puddle of number two. So, you know, I kind of put in those stories in the book and talking about it and hopefully highlighting the fact that, you know, how honorable our profession is. But most importantly, like how what a blessing and an honor it is to wear the uniform and serve with our nation's finest.
Wow, that's incredible. So talk through the mechanics a little bit of writing the book. You had a co-author, and you mentioned your fiance was a big integral part, probably reminding you of various things and stories you've told over the years. With a co-author, did he basically just interview you with a tape recorder and then he runs off and writes the book for you? Or would you feed him a few paragraphs here and there that you'd written yourself and then he fills in the gaps? How does that work?
So it started with the interview piece. He would write it. And then I that was a nightmare because it's not my voice anymore. And it just doesn't, you know, he was trying the best that he could to really, like, you know, transfer over what I was saying onto paper. And so what happened next is that Carson would help rewrite a lot of what he wrote as well, just to get him my voice. And then I started writing it, and we went with, I just wrote it, and then we talked about it, and then he would rewrite it in a specific way that made more sense. And then Carson would do the final edits on it.
So when you would dictate or do a recorded conversation with him and he would go off and write down what you wrote or what you said, when you read it, you immediately felt like, this isn't me talking.
Right. Sometimes.
Interesting. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, which is why it's so important. If you really want to write a book, write it, you know, be part of it. You know, at least write the first draft. And it's so much easier because you can, it's incredible as you just go into it. Like, you know, you start typing and about the memories and you just type the memories of how you remember it. Mm-hmm. And what he did was a really, really, really good job of editing the pieces and kind of rewriting it in my voice at times. And I would go back through it line by line, and Carson, she just knows me better than anybody else in the world. So she's heard the stories 1,000 times. She met the people I'm talking about in the book. So she was able to really coordinate that and help me with it.
And so, it went much better if you would write it down in your words, even though it might not be, you know, publishable type writing. It still worked out better if you wrote it yourself, and then he would go through and clean it up for you. And then when he did that, you were comfortable with it.
100%.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was the best way to do it. It took just a couple of months to get there, figure out like what's the best way to do it. And it worked. You know, we just. You know, I wrote like for the last three chapters, completely wrote them, you know, and then he went through it. We went back through it and Carson went through it. And then we finally came down to a solution.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Flo, we're getting close to the end of our time here. How long has your book been out now?
It's going to go on a month.
1 month. Okay, great. How's it going for you? Like, you put your bestseller yet and all that, or what's happening?
I don't know about the bestseller. It's going pretty well, you know. There's been a lot of things happening in the news, you know, and so we, you know, Jake Tapper really hooked us up. You're going to be a big help, and Well, we sold quite a few copies, and so we're very excited about it. But, you know, there's more to sell. It's a great story, I think, that people would enjoy it and relate with it.
Okay. Well, hey, we're getting towards the end of our time here. You know, if you're talking to that soon-to-be veteran, somebody going through a transition, maybe somebody that's already gotten out recently but didn't like where they landed, in regards to either entrepreneurship or finding their next purpose in life, their next passion, as you mentioned before, what kind of advice would you have to that transitioning veteran?
Well, I think, first of all, I said dream big. You know, don't put anything off because you don't think you can make it. I was never, I worked for the biggest aerospace company in the world, and I never, for one time in my life, ever wanted to work with anywhere near airplanes. It's just, and I love it. You know, you'd be very surprised at the passion, what your next passion could be. Just because you never thought about it doesn't mean that's not going to be your passion. So network with people, call with people, definitely start yourself a LinkedIn profile if you don't have one, and start, you know, figuring out who you should be talking to next. There's some great research. You get a 1 year of free LinkedIn premium when you go with LinkedIn. You sign up with LinkedIn because you're a service member or you're a veteran. And then you can connect with people there and really figure out, like, well, you know, could I work for Microsoft? Could I work for Facebook? Of course you could, even if you're an infantryman. There's a lot of skill sets that you've and experiences that you've gained over your course of your military career that these organizations want. And one of them is called team management and leadership. So, you know, do so and really challenge yourself. Go out there and reach out to people you never thought you don't think will ever answer you. Or that you or check out opportunities you never thought you could ever potentially work in, and go out there and challenge yourself, and you'll be very surprised that the opportunity is going to be presented to you.
Well said, Florent. Well, hey, thank you for sharing your story and actually telling the story that actually made you famous and talking through all the good, the bad, and ugly that went along with it. I really appreciate you doing that, and also thanks for being an inspiration to other veterans and everybody that's familiar with your story. Like I said, you're carrying it well. You're representing well. So keep up the good work. We look forward to seeing your success in the future.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Take care.
Roger that. Hey, these two veterans are Oscar Mike. As you can tell from listening to the Veteran on the Move podcast, interviews are a great way to tell your story and spread the word about your business. If you would like to get booked as a podcast guest, I recommend Interview Valet. You can check out Interview Valet at veteranonthemove.com/valet. Be sure to check out thrive15.com, the world's premier online education platform that helps entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs learn how to start or grow a successful business. Start your free 30-day membership by going to thrive15.com and use the promo code VETERAN. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.